from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Royteam.
Good morning. Happy Thursday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Happy Thursday, everybody. I realized there was something that I was forgetting to do at the top of the hour, and that was to remind you that we do have a new text line, our new state roofing text line, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. And we encourage you, you will see that oftentimes we will actually respond. A lot of times it's Chef, a lot of times it's G, but actually sometimes I get a chance to respond too. And we love your feedback. We love your story ideas. And it's fun to know that you are hanging out with us throughout the morning. And we love that. Also, just a reminder that coming up at 10:33, you're not going to want to miss this, especially if you have kids in school right now. Are your kids going to eventually be required to have the COVID vaccine? That's one of the questions that we're going to have for State School Superintendent Chris Rakedahl, who will be joining us at 10:33.
All right, let's get to it. It's time for the top three things that you need to know at 10.
Number one.
And when it comes to elections, school board campaigns don't usually generate a lot of attention, but boy, that has sure changed. It is the hyper-local campaigns that are now becoming hotbeds of controversy, especially over the way kids are taught about racism. And for Republicans especially, it is the start of a grassroots effort to build up an entire political movement all across the country that is centered around school curriculum. And Cairo Radio's Nicole Jennings has taken a look at what is happening in one particular school district locally.
We don't have to look further than our own Maple Valley, where the Tahoma school board race recently heated up over the discovery of one former campaign manager's TikTok videos.
You too can achieve the American dream if only you work hard enough to conform to society's norms. And by society, I mean white supremacy.
Local parent and school district volunteer Alicia Bush was until this week managing the campaign of candidate Haley Pendergraft. Bush often uses TikTok to express her experiences with racism as a member of the AAPI community.
Dear white people, you've always had the freedom to do exactly as you please. The only change for you is that you're just now starting to see some consequences for being able to do whatever you please. And I understand that these consequences might feel like persecution, but I can guarantee you it is not. Being able to make choices without any accountability or consequences is not freedom. That is terrorism.
Some parents in the district were shocked by some of the wording.
If you are a person of whiteness, I don't give a f-. I don't give a f- about your comfort. I don't give a f- about your feelings. If my existence and my statements and actions cause you discomfort, then I am doing the right thing.
Candidate Haley Pendergraft took to Facebook to defend the videos last week.
Alicia represents a person who has different lived experiences than I do. I think there's great value in that. And my whole pursuit in running for this position is to build a bridge. I want to build a bridge between a very diverse community and where we send our kids and send our taxpayers' dollar, which is our school district.
She did acknowledge that some people may find them offensive.
Her perspective to some may feel very raw and feel very abrasive, and that's okay.
But she said it was worth it to have a variety of viewpoints.
Just because someone who works with me has a very strong, strong belief, it does not mean that that strong belief is a negative impact to me or what I stand for. In fact, I find it valuable.
And she said she believed those viewpoints would help her achieve the goals of the campaign.
I can represent my own life experience. I can represent the experience of people who are like me, but it's harder for me to understand and to represent experiences that are not my own. And that has been my goal.
Conversely, her opponent, Kyle Myers, is campaigning on the platform of keeping critical race theory out of schools.
The theory argues that white supremacy is a permanent condition and that all white Americans are inherently racist and oppressive. which I disagree with. I vehemently am against.
According to the NAACP, critical race theory looks at how racism is, quote, embedded in laws, policies, and institutions that uphold and reproduce racial inequalities. This can be everything from the legal system to housing to access to health care. Myers tells me that he thinks this discussion is fine for the college level, but not K through 12. He does acknowledge that a watered-down version can sometimes work, but he says all too often, the teacher takes it to the extreme.
Some teachers take that information, and as I've been quoted before by someone, they put it in their toolbox. The teachers actually use it to be a more well-rounded approach. But there are many teachers that may take it more literally and have that implicit bias bleed into the classroom.
So when he saw the TikTok videos, that to him encompassed everything that he sees as being part of CRT.
The campaign manager for my opponent has the First Amendment right to express herself however she feels compelled to do so. She did, and that expression was definitely not in line with what I believe or many of the families in the Tahoma School District that support me believe.
And for him, this confirmed that even if CRT is not an official part of the curriculum at the Tahoma schools,
it was in the school district. There are people with this ideology and this approach to fighting racism with racism that are at the school district.
Now, in light of the videos circulating, Bush stepped down from her parent volunteer position on the district's equity committee. In a statement, the district told me that Bush's words do not align with their equity goals and that her decision to step down was for the best. And KTTH's Jason Rance found out earlier this week that Haley Pendergraft has decided to manage her own campaign for the rest of the race. So while this particular chapter appears to be over, the race curriculum debate is anything but. And this Maple Valley controversy illustrates just how hot a topic CRT is going to be in the coming years at all levels of government.
And Nicole Jenning joins us live. Thank you for that great reporting, Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
So I've just got to react, first of all. I think what you've shown in your report is the two extremes. And
yes.
On the one hand, the volunteer who was also the racial equity director for, was it the school or the district?
The district.
Okay. How she presented it and what she did on TikTok is exactly the kind of ammo that anyone who wants to fight any kind of history lessons, real history lessons, can use to say, look, see, this is so divisive, it's racist itself, et cetera. And
yep.
I think it mm-hmm. it has harmed the good work that is being done in the area of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And there is a lot of good
absolutely.
Work.
Absolutely.
And it's just mm-hmm, this kind of thing that just makes me nuts, because on the other extreme, this idea, there's going to be a lot of hyping about, we're going to hear about critical race theory all throughout, all the way till next November. And it's mm-hmm. it is frightened people so much. So what has happened now with the school district? Do they have someone who is continuing to do that kind of work, or they're just giving it up altogether?
Yes, they haven't gotten rid of their equity committee or anything like that. It's just that she has, I think, been probably pressured to resign, or maybe chose to resign because of the feedback she was getting from the other parents and things. But I absolutely agree with you that the problem with this is that that kind of extreme example confirmed all of the worst fears of the people who are against CRT. And it's such a shame that they couldn't have seen, you know, what it's actually, the toned down version of what actually would be taught in the classrooms, which certainly wouldn't be anything like these TikTok videos.
I wonder if when they mean watered down version, is that how we got the celebration of Columbus Day every single year? Okay, so with this race right now, Nicole, so is this race, in those words of the former campaign manager, is that going to be used to maybe say, like, hey, that campaign manager's words kind of reflect the person that's running? Are they going to be using that against her?
Oh, yeah. If you look at Haley Pendergraft's Facebook page, There are comments from her opponent, from Kyle Myers, not from him specifically, but from his supporters, using the campaign manager's words against Haley. And so unsurprisingly, she's tried in the last couple of days to really distance herself from the former campaign manager and say, okay, this person doesn't speak for me. Our styles are completely different. But she did make that video a few days ago talking about how, you know, it's valuable to have different points of view and learn from other people's experiences. So I think she's going to have to find some way to tread a middle line that shows that while she loves to hear everyone else's experiences, she has her own distinct style of conveying that information.
But here we have seen, now this is the third case, because we talked about it with Kathy Lambert, who had to fire her political campaign
right.
folks
mm-hmm.
because of that flyer that was sent out. And then we're talking about Nicole Thomas Kennedy, who had her campaign manager saying these tweets too. You know what? I'm sorry, but I think the damage has been done. And I'm curious how this is going to turn out, especially when we're talking about Maple Valley, which I'm guessing there are, you know, they might tend to lean maybe a little bit more conservative.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So I think the damage has been done in this particular case. And I would just encourage, and I know that there is a certain style and a certain thinking that that you have to be extreme to explain how people of color, in particular black communities, feel, et cetera, et cetera. But I think some of that just automatically turns people off, and people who mm-hmm. might actually want to do the work are just already put on the defensive, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think Alicia Bush has every right to be angry. I, as a white woman, have no idea what she has experienced, and she has every right to express herself. But unfortunately, I just think, you know, you catch more flies with honey. And I think in this case, if you're trying to get some of those moderates over to your side, or trying to build a bridge, as the candidate said, it might be better to take kind of that more toned down style.
Right. Absolutely. Well, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Nicole. And you can read full story, too, on MyNorthwest.com.
Really quick, Ursula, yeah. I just want to say that when you came in and had some comments after Nicole's amazing reporting there, I just want to say that the way you talked about that was excellent. You talked about that excellent, because like you said, that's what happened. And look, when it comes to delivery, even me, myself, over the last couple years, I've had to learn delivery, right? I would take the words from my father. My father used to say, champ, take the anger out your voice. He would always say that mm-hmm. to me, right? And so oftentimes we want others, like, look, I can have an opinion and that's great, but we need to have others kind of better understand, like, we, in order for the work to be done, we're going to need others to help. So yeah. I just thought you did a great job.
Oh, well, and I guess it's just this idea that if you put people on the defensive, they're not listening anymore.
Nope.
And we want them to be allies.
Nope.
But you don't want to do it by making them feel like they're ostracized, or that there's no room, or, you know. And so I disagree with that tactic, and I know it is used.
Number two.
Okay, so here's a question for you. Should your boss pay for your parking? Seattle City Council member Shama Sawant wants to mandate that contractors reimburse construction workers for parking in the city. This is already happening for construction workers in certain neighborhoods like First Hill and Bellevue, thanks to union contract negotiations. But council member Sawant wants parking reimbursed everywhere. And this is according to a press release from her office. Some workers currently have to pay $100 to $150 a week or more for parking near jobs downtown. And many contractors either do not provide free parking, or they limit the reimbursement.
I'm all for it. Yes.
You agree with Shama Sawant?
Yes, I agree with Shama Sawant. Yes, these contractors, these folks that are going in there, they got to pay for their parking, and they're trying to do these jobs. Yes, the least that can be done is for their parking to be paid for. That extra expense, you start talking about $100 to $150 a week. That can be anywhere from $400 to $600 a month. That right there is a car payment or insurance for your child, because, by the way, you know it's your child's insurance be real expensive. So those things, yes, absolutely. Mm. Okay, Shama, I'm with you.
No, I'm not. And this
why?
Is why.
Why?
Not to say that parking isn't expensive, but okay, this to me is just pandering by Shama Sawant to try to get union votes. You remember how she was trying to jump in on the carpenter strike and they were like, can you back off, please? We don't need your help. This is just another attempt for her to solidify her labor connections. And again, why should the city force contractors to reimburse construction workers? How about making that something that the union fights for with the contractors? And then this, to me, is exactly the same as the city mandating grocery stores to pay hazard pay.
So you don't wait. So you don't necessarily disagree with it. You just disagree that Shama's involved.
No. I'm giving you the reasons why. I'm saying I don't think it should be mandated by the city. It just happens to be proposed by Shama Sawant, not a big fan of.
This. I agree. It's a good parallel to the grocery store workers, right? Because were you mandating that everyone else got raises?
Yes.
But this actually affects everyone. And I think you should fight for this. And here's why. Because when I drive in every day in the morning, you know who fills up the entire neighborhood?
Construction workers?
Construction. There are so many construction workers that come down every day. And if you want a shot at a parking spot in a neighborhood, like, you know, First Hill or Madison, wherever.
Okay. Then as a city council member,
this could actually benefit everyone.
Provide more public parking. How's that? How about not just...
Where?
Where?
Or how about just...
Bike
lanes all over the place.
How about just not have those parking meter people going around and round and round trying to bust you? How's that?
Okay. I don't know. Well, I don't think parking meter folks can listen because I don't know if they got a radio in that little buggy. I can't stand them. I'm telling you, there's something about them. Me and them don't get along.
Probably because you're always that guy. Hey, wait. I was just getting some change.
You ever notice they say no, at least to me. I've never had one say, oh, okay, you know what? I understand. They don't even hardly talk to you. Nope. They just drive away from you. I apologize for bringing that up. But anyways.
My friend Gigi says she agrees with you, G. She says,
What'd she say?
Too much of her paycheck is going to parking. I get it. But have the contractors and the construction workers union work that out, Shama Sawant.
All Shama is doing is shedding
and pointing
the spotlight at this issue that you agree with, but you got something against it because Shama is a part of it. Give Shama her love right now. Give her flowers, Ursula. Let me hear it.
I already gave you my reasons why. If it was Andrew Lewis doing it, I would say no to Andrew Lewis, too.
All right. Coming up next, we're going to have a guest on the show. That's right. The superintendent of public instruction, Chris Rakedow, will join us to find out, are there going to be vaccination mandates for kids in school? We'll see about that next. G and Ursula.
Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. As we have been reporting, there have been COVID outbreaks in schools, and that has led to hundreds of students across the state to quarantine. It has also forced some school closures. And we saw a quote from State School Superintendent Chris Rakedow saying that all parents should be preparing for more closures this year, but he didn't anticipate a complete shutdown of all schools. So we wanted to invite the state superintendent to join us to talk about that a little bit more. And Chris Rakedow is on the line now. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So talk to us about that. I feel like we're kind of paving the way to get parents prepared for the idea that we could be talking about vaccine mandates for students. Is that what the direction we're going?
What we've been trying to say to folks is we're still in the middle of a vaccine or a pandemic, and people need to be prepared for all the twists and turns we've already experienced. We've got 1 million-plus kids back in school. It's going really well, but it's super hard. A lot of contact tracing, exhausted staff with teaching, and they're going through all these public health metrics. And there are some places where local health jurisdictions have said, you know, we've got too many cases in a classroom, and maybe they've shut the classroom down for 7 days or 10 days or 14 days. Our message is we don't expect any of that stuff, but everyone should be prepared in case there is something in your classroom that would cause you to be out for your student to be out for a week or two. But so far, it's gone, you know, pretty darn well. This question of student vaccine is a very different question, if that's what you were connecting.
Yes, absolutely. So where are you on that front? I know the Seattle School District has raised the idea that once it is approved for the younger ages or given emergency approval, that it could be a requirement, at least in that district.
Yeah, we're going to take a statewide approach on this, and it isn't going to be a district-by-district decision. What I have continued to tell the governor and public health officials, and I've been very public about, is this needs to go through the process that it would go through for any kid vaccine requirement. And we have lots of vaccines that are required of our students in the state, and we've been doing it for decades with really high compliance by parents, or they have an exemption process. And that means it gets full federal approval, not just emergency. It goes through a federal panel. Our local, and when I mean local, our state board of health in each of the 50 states then goes through a process. And my message is get on with it, expedite that, still go through it so that it's medical professionals and it's doctors and it's public health experts ultimately recommending this, and it's not an executive order. But that's where I'm at, and I think they will do that, and I think it's going to take quite a bit of time. So I still do not anticipate a student vaccine requirement this year. I do think people should be prepared for that next year, that it will go on the list with the other vaccine requirements that our students comply with.
Like has been talked about, Washington is one of the three states that require masks in schools statewide. Question for you, how are things going? Like, you know, here we are, we're in October of the school year. How has it been going throughout the state as far as with schools and our quarantine and closures? How's it been going, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at the data, if all you do is look at empirical data, we obviously keep infection rates much lower in the state than other places that don't do this. We've kept our hospitalizations at half the national rate, and we've kept our mortalities per 100,000 at less than half of the national average. So it's working. And if I can just be totally candid with you all, students are amazing. And for 99.9% of them, this is not an issue. They want to be in school. They want to learn. They're adaptive and flexible. They're wearing their face coverings. We don't have a lot of issues with this. We have issues with adults who want to make it a political statement or an ideological statement, and I respect their right to do that. But in the classroom, this is not an issue. What is an issue, though, is contact tracing and spending incredible amounts of time and resources calling families when there is a positive case, because we have very strict protocols to make sure that all of the families of children who are in close contact get notified. And in many cases, you don't have to go quarantine or at least test to come back in. That's what's causing us a lot of time and energy, not the masking issue at all.
That's interesting. So in your opinion, with all of this, do you expect some pushback from maybe on the other side of the state, Eastern Washington?
Well, again, the masking's going really well there, too. But there are certainly more folks with a conservative, you know, set of values that don't think this is something government should require of students or staff. And so, naturally, there's a lot more energy about it over there. It is mostly, it's played out. They've had their time. They've made their expression of interest. And you know, obviously, I respect that. I think it's got a little testy at some school board meetings over there because they think their school boards can undo a state requirement like a masking requirement or the vaccine requirement for adults at this point. School boards can't undo that, and so folks should really respect those locally elected officials. They are not the ones making that decision. What's obviously going to come next is, you know, over the next year, folks are going to keep going down this process of the vaccine potentially being required for students. That will be the next thing that causes people to flare. And again, we'll respect the process, but my goodness, for 4 or 5 decades, we've had vaccine requirements for kids with a 90 to 93% compliance with very little political ideology wrapped around that. And it would be unfortunate if we did that this time.
Chris, we only have about a minute. I want you to talk about some of the positive things that are happening right now, given where we were 18 months ago and where we are today.
Yeah, I'd love that. you know, a year ago and 8 months ago, very few students as a percentage were in person every day. We were kind of phasing back, but obviously dealing with, you know, lots of technology imbalances in the state in terms of connectivity. What we have now is kids in school, and they're playing sports, and they're in leadership and dance and music and theater and art, and, you know, they're loving the connection with their peers. It's hard, I'll be honest with you. For some little kids, they've been out for 18 months, and so we see social-emotional issues. Like we're retraining them on respectful behavior and raising their hand and all of that, but that's just part of what school does as well, and it's going really well. It's on balance so much better in terms of a mental health standpoint for most kids, not all of them. Some of them really liked being remote, and many districts have provided that opportunity, but that's the positive. Getting kids more consistent meals who need it, that's a positive. And, of course, we're now looking at, you know, some data that's starting to come in on academics. And like the rest of the country, maybe 3 to 5 months of impact out of the 13 years we're going to have these kids. And so we've got plans in every district now to recover there, too. So it's really, really good if we could get more adults to focus their energy on what's best for students and helping students engage in the learning without the anxiety of the political environment. That would be better for kids as well.
We've got about 30 seconds, and this question came in from a listener. They said that they had heard that students will have to do standardized testing twice this year to make up for last year. Is that true?
Yeah, the federal government requires standardized testing in math, science, and English language arts. Our state was one that sought a waiver. We went at them last year and said, we don't want to test last year. Kids were remote. We were just coming back in the spring. We negotiated a long time with them. Ultimately, they said, nope, you must. So we kicked it into this fall. We did no standardized testing last year. We put it into the fall. We shrunk the assessment. So we're in that window right now. It's a shorter assessment. We will do this fall to assess learning for last year. And then we'll be back on our regular spring assessment schedule. So this year, we are assessing twice, as required by the federal government, because last year we didn't assess at all in a standardized way.
Wow. And they kind of have an idea that this will provide for a more accurate measurement, they believe?
Yeah. You know, again, we just didn't think last year was the right environment to measure whether students can really demonstrate their knowledge and understanding, because they were all over the place in terms of where they were learning and their devices. This will be more accurate. It'll be more reliable. I still think we could have gotten it done with one assessment this year, but the feds did not agree with us. And so we're going to do a short one now and a regular one in the spring, and then keep asking this question of the validity and the importance of these assessments long term, which I think the whole world is starting to recognize has been over relied upon for too many years.
Agree 100% on that. Chris Ragdow, Superintendent of Public Instruction. We really appreciate you. Thank you for your time. Coming up next, it is time for Scenarios. It's Gian Ursula. This is Gian Ursula, everybody. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it is time for Agree to Disagree. But right now, Scenarios. Let's hit it.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
My brother came over from Colorado Springs for a funeral for his best friend's father who passed away from COVID. He and his 18-year-old son are both vaccinated, but my 69-year-old mom is not and has only had one vaccine, the tetanus shot, in her life. My brother wanted to visit our aunt in Oregon and bring my mom with him. She hasn't seen her sister in many years. My aunt is vaccinated, and she is very careful who she is around and insisted that they all be vaccinated to visit her. I think this is beyond reasonable since she is vaccinated, therefore is protected and should not worry about my mom's vaccine status. Here's my question, though. Is it reasonable to demand your relatives be vaccinated to visit you? 888-973-CHIRO is the state roofing text line. Ursula, you're up to bat first.
In this case, I would say yes. And she stated her reasons why. And I understand that his mom is not a big fan of vaccines and only has been vaccinated once. But again, I mean, there are breakthrough cases. And even though the other relative is vaccinated, there is a chance that she could get it. So, I mean, in this case, if someone says, you know what, I don't feel comfortable, you have to respect that. You know, it might not be for good feelings. I mean, how about coming up with a different way to visit And maybe you can't get hugs, but you could do it on Zoom. You can do it on, there are other ways that you can reconnect and just say, we'll do it this way until, you know, both of us feel comfortable.
Chef, before you go, I'm going to go ahead and dig in here and go first. I am looking forward to this Thanksgiving. Well, number one, there's going to be a lot of families who maybe did not get together last year, having the opportunity to get together with family. Maybe you took a year off. Number two, I'm looking forward to hearing stories from our texters, our emails. Like, there's going to be some drama. You know what I mean? Uncle Cletus ain't vaccinated. He wants to come, but Aunt Lois is like, he can't come. It's going to be some stuff this Thanksgiving. I just wanted to bring that in. And yes, if somebody wants to say you need to be vaccinated to come see me, they have that right. Chef, what you got, bruh?
I don't know. I mean, I figure you have to follow the rules in everyone's house, right? And unfortunately, everyone has to look out for themselves and their family and what they think is in their best interest. Some people feel that a vaccine is not right for them, and they're leery of it. They feel it's dangerous. Well, they're making a decision that's right for them, and everyone else has the right to make their own decision as well. Do I want to be around unvaccinated people? I mean, I think we know someone right now that has a breakthrough infection. It does happen.
Absolutely.
People can still get very sick. They're less likely to die, and they're less likely to be infected, much less. But it can still happen. And, you know, just respect the rules of someone's home.
I love what 206 says. Absolutely. You are the only one who is in charge of your own health. You need to do whatever you feel is necessary to stay safe and healthy. End of story. So, yes.
I like what 253 says. My mom lives in Arizona. She wouldn't even talk to me over the phone until I was fully vaccinated.
That could be a whole different problem. There might be another issue there. Just saying.
I mean, have you ever gone into someone's house and they're like, can you please take off your shoes? And you're like, nah, I'm not. I'm just keeping the boots on. I'm clomping through here. I don't care. It's how I keep my feet safe.
Okay. Hey, well, just real quick. Who of the three of us has a no shoes policy in the house?
What?
G?
First of all, you guys know Lillian, right?
Yes.
You know that there's no shoes in Lillian's house? Are you crazy?
I tell people, because they're always like starting to take off the shoes. No, we're good. Keep your shoes on. You're good.
Wait, you keep the shoes on in the house? How about you, Chef?
We take our shoes off, but if someone wants to keep their shoes on, that's fine with me.
Hey. I'm going to tell you something. Lillian is the nicest person in the world. She will cook for you. She'll do whatever. You walk in your house and they'll say, hey, you need me to take my shoes off? Yes, you do. Take your shoes off.
And hey, coming up, booties.
Okay, agree to disagree. Coming up next is G and Ursula.